I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The distinguished historian Mark Zelke joins me again. He's published an umpteenth book, Through Blood and Sweat, A Remembrance Trek Across Sicily's World War II Battlegrounds. Some backstory. In 2008, Mr. Zelke published Operation Husky, another volume in his highly regarded Canadian battle series. The combat on Sicily was nearly forgotten. They were grueling battles with 562 casualties. A Montreal businessman named Steve Gregory approaches Mark with the idea of a 20-day, 300-kilometer march through Sicily in the footsteps of the soldiers. In 2013, 70 years after the original campaign, Operation Husky 2013 began. And this book reflects on the sacrifice there by Canadians, as well as chronicles this unique act of remembrance. The daily hikes covered between 15 and 35 kilometers a day, and in the July heat, you can well imagine how arduous it might have been. Mark describes the exhaustion, but also the cheers of the Sicilians who gathered along the way. It's such a compelling journey that Mark was a part of, and I'll get him to tell us about the experience and the active process of remembrance embodied in this journey and his literary work. It's also fitting to have Mark in so close to November 11th, as he has in the past. We'll take a moment to reflect on Remembrance Day. Mark Zelke is the recipient of the 2014 Pierre Burton Award, the Governor General's History Award for Popular Media. His Canadian Battle Series book, Holding Juno, received the City of Victoria Butler Book Prize, and he's been on this program for previous books, For Honor's Sake, The War of 1812, and The Brokering of an Uneasy Peace, Brave Battalion, The Remarkable Saga of the 16th Battalion, Canadian Scottish in the First World War, Tragedy at Dieppe, Operation Jubilee, August 19th, 1942, and Forgotten Victory, 1st Canadian Army and the Cruel Winter of 1944-45. The website for more is at zelke.ca. Douglas and McIntyre publishes this latest book. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program in person today, Mark Zelke. Mr. Zelke, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph.
It's an abbreviated biography that I just read, and I'm out of breath, but because you have written so many other books. Is there a count as to what this book is?
It's number 27.
27. Wow. And you're still going on. You've got other books that you're working on.
That's right. There's going to be at least three more in the Canadian Battle Series, which will bring it up to 14 titles, and then Through Blood and Sweat is a companion title to that series, is the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah, it's a great diversion. Not that we were looking for a diversion, because those books that you write in the Canadian Battle Series are always highly regarded and much awaited by history buffs and the certain fans of yours. Before we get into what you did in July 2013, just how did the idea of the book come about?
Well, the idea of the book actually came about while I was getting into the training for Operation Husky 2013, because we were doing a lot of weekends walking to get in shape to actually be able to do the trek. And as I was walking along one day on the Galloping Goose Trail, I just sort of started playing around with what we were heading into. I was aware that it was going to be a unique experience and a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And I started thinking, I've often, in the epilogues of the Canadian Battle Series, I've talked in small amounts about about remembrance and how that integrates with that particular book. And so I've had this kind of fascination with what I call remembrance culture, and just realized that I could take Through Blood and Sweat and the Operation Husky 2013 experience and use that as a prism to look at the whole remembrance culture. So that was when I decided, well, there were probably going to be a book here.
Well, we'll reflect on Remembrance Day because we're so close to it later on. We've done that before. You mm-hmm. were kind enough to come on a few years ago to talk about that when I felt that we needed some sort of reflection on it that particular year. Does going back to Sicily, I mean, you were there, of course, in the course of writing that previous book, Operation Husky, but going back now and doing this trek 70 years later, I mean, that must have fulfilled not only the work that you do as a historian, but just as a person who remembers and who honors the service of veterans.
That's right. It was a very personally satisfying experience because it had these different components to it. One, we were marching in the footsteps of the 1st Canadian Infantry Division, so we were on the same roads that you knew that 70 years earlier they had walked. So there was that experience. And then there was the experience of planting the markers. We had markers that for every soldier who had been killed in Sicily, there was a marker. And we tried to plant those on the days that they had died and roughly in the same places that they had died. And then held ceremonies with those. And that became a very personally moving. Everyone who was involved in the Operation Husky 2013, I think, found that to be a very unique and moving experience to do that. And then, of course, we were moving. We were always marching towards the Azure Canadian War Cemetery and the ultimate conclusion of the trek, which was going to be the remembrance ceremony, where there would be a roll call, where there would be a person in front of every one of the 462 headstones that are in that cemetery.
So 462 of the 562 Canadian are buried there.
That's right.
Yeah. These markers, they're made of what?
They were made out of 1x4 wood.
Yeah.
And then they had a sharpened end at one end, and they were painted white, and they had the Canadian flag and the Italian flag, and then the name and rank and unit of the soldier. And then the most of them were made by Italian school children or children. There was a class at the Vincent Massey College in Montreal that also made them. And the children in Sicily, most of them had written something in the way of remembrance or a tribute to the particular soldier that they made that marker of. And those were quite, you know, just the children's words were quite insightful in sometimes.
So the original book, I guess, served a great deal in terms of say, the background that one needed, just the logistics and the research, I guess, could be derived from that book. But in terms of the other research, in terms of each marker and having the names and the sort, who did that?
I did actually the assembling of that. Steve contracted me to, you know, identify, which was actually kind of a challenge because some of the records were not complete, and we had to try one record over here and another record over here, and then we, you know, managed to find, well, yes, okay, now we know who all of the soldiers were, and made sure that, because that was one of the things that Steve Gregory, the businessman who was behind this thing, one of his great fears is we would miss somebody, and that would be so disrespectful in a way if we got everyone except you.
So the book comes out in 2008, and how long after that came out did you hear from this fellow named Steve Gregory?
He got in touch with me literally 2 months after the book had been released. It was released in October, and my phone rang about December the 10th, and this fellow was on the line, and I didn't know anything about him or anything, and he started talking about that my book was a godsend because it was filling in the blanks of what he was, and then he had came up with that he had this, what struck me initially as quite preposterous idea. You know, we're all going to go to Sicily and we're going to walk, 350 kilometers in the footsteps of the 1st Canadian Infantry Division, and I'm going to get 1,000 people into Azure Canadian War Cemetery and have a big remembrance call. Well, I'd been to the Azure Canadian Cemetery a couple times, and hardly anyone ever went there. You know, you'd look at the book, the sign-in book, and it could be weeks since somebody had actually been in the cemetery. So it just seemed like such a remarkably ambitious concept. And yet, as I got to know Steve better and started to see how, you know, when he gets the bit between his teeth, this is a man who's pretty much unstoppable, and he will find his way to achieve things. And I guess it was, I initially didn't really see myself as going. I was going to give him some assistance and then say la vie, go and have a nice time. And it was sort of about a year or two into the project, I started realizing that not only was I going to go, but I was going to be one of the marchers. And at that time, we didn't know if there was going to be 100 people marching or if it was just going to be Steve and I.
Yeah.
And in the end, it came down to 10 people doing the marching.
And so his interest in all of this, did he have family, say, or a personal connection to Operation Husky or Sicily even?
No, he had no connection to the military or anything related to Sicily at all until his son, through a circumstance, they met a Sicilian veteran, and he came and had dinner at Steve Gregory's house. And his son, Eric, was entranced by the stories that this old veteran was telling, Charles Hunter. And Eric decided he was going to do a school project, because they had to do a school history project. So he decided he would do a school history project on the Operation Husky Sicily part, mm-hmm. and specifically a battle called the Battle of Monte Acero, which is a big, tall mountain in the inland country. It's part of the mountains, the shoulder off of Mount Etna. And the Canadians, the Hastings and Prince Edward Regiment particularly, fought a very hard battle to win that mountain. And so he decided he was going to make that his project. And so he won a whole bunch of awards.
He was in grade 6, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in grade 6. And so the Historica Foundation has a program for these, and he ultimately ended up going to the national finals of the awards. And after that, Steve decided to take the family to Italy, and they tour Italy, and they ended up in Sicily, and that was when Steve drove alone to Azure Canadian War Cemetery, and he saw the same thing I did, that hardly anyone went there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he spent 3 hours or 4 hours there, going from headstone to headstone, personally thanking each of these fellows for their service. And then, as he was leaving, he looked back and he just had this spontaneous decision that he said, I will return and I will bring others. And once he made that commitment, he just stuck with it. You know, and it was it was 5 years, you know, that he worked towards this.
And so how many of you eventually went there in that it was July 2013, and you spent how long there? A couple weeks, or?
We were there from July 10th to July. The event ended in July 30th, so yeah. 20 days.
Okay, just the logistics of all of that, I mean, you've touched on that already, but how many people participated in the trek?
There were 10 marchers who were at the beginning and all the way through to the end.
Yeah.
And then we had about another 5 to 8 people who joined us at different phases, some of them for just a day or two, some for a little longer. And then at the end, there was a 60-strong Canadian Forces contingent that came in. And on the last day of our marching, the majority of them, about 45 of them, joined us for the last day of marching. And so that was an interesting day, because we had about 60, 70 people in all marching that day. And as we got closer to the July 30th, the Jura Canadian War Cemetery experience, more and more Canadians were coming in. We started seeing busloads of Canadians, you know, moving around. And when we had the ceremony at on the summit of Monte Acero, for example, there was probably a couple hundred people up on the summit that day.
And you filled the cemetery.
Yeah, that was amazing. Nobody's got a clear statistic on that. It ranges between 800 and 1,000 people. And about half of those were Canadians, and the other half were Sicilians.
What did the Sicilians think of all of this?
Well, this was what really intrigued me, because I kind of thought, I knew Steve had spent a lot of time getting the mayors of the different communities to agree that they would hold a remembrance ceremony each day. So we would come to a town and they would be waiting for us to have an official ceremony. Well, so I knew that was going to happen, but that could have been 6 people, or a little color guard of police or military or something. I didn't know how was the average Sicilian going to buy into this. What would they do? And so, you know, various first days, you sort of approach the town thinking, well, what's going to happen? And what happened was there'd be hundreds of people on the street, you know, waving Canadian flags and coming over to shake our hands, and it was extremely powerful.
I'll bet, yeah, and you describe some of that in the book, and it is quite moving, some of these moments that you have with the Sicilians along the way.
Yeah.
What were your days like? Because it is July, it's rather hot. In terms of planning the walks and the walking, I should say, that you had to do. I mean,
yeah. So the we had a logistics team that was with us, a group of ex forces personnel that Steve had found and drafted into the operation, and so they planned out a route. Working with the Carabinieri, who were the sort of military police that are in Italy, so they were looking at particularly, okay, we wanted to do this historical recreation, but they also had to make sure that we would actually not get killed, you know, doing it by being run over by trucks or something on a very busy street or road. So they figured out a route, and then we would do the march. And our days started very, very early. We were often up at 3, 3:34 in the morning because we were trying to beat the sun a bit, get to where we were going to start walking at sunrise is what we aimed for. And then we would be able to walk, you know, the 15, if it was 15 kilometers, that would take us about 2.5 to 3 hours. And so you'd be done before the real heat came on. But, you know, the moment that sun started to peek up over Mount Etna, you could just feel that temperature starting to rise. And there were a lot of the days when it broke 40 degrees Celsius. And it was pretty much, you always knew it was going to be at least 38 degrees. Yeah. So it was really hot.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, just imagine having to be in a uniform carrying gear and the sort. That's what those soldiers went through.
Yeah, we thought about that a lot. It was something that the marchers talked about pretty much every day, because they had, you know, they had, first of all, the uniforms were kind of wool or really heavy cotton, whichever it would be, heavy. They had the steel helmet on their head, which was like putting on a frying pan and walking around. They had their guns, they had their equipment, all of that kind of stuff. And we were walking much more lightly because we had a support motorhome, and it had water and food and stuff aboard. So we could travel very lightly. And we also always were making the point to ourselves that at least nobody was shooting at us as well.
And you had these vests on because I guess that's for your safety in the sort, right?
That's right. So we wore reflective vests.
Physically, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it would be tiring.
Yeah.
Feet hurt in the sort.
Yeah. We all started to develop definitely effects from the experience, because the day-to-day grind for 20 days, it starts to take its toll on you. The heat was such that we all started to develop a heat rash situation, which is kind of a bad blistering on the skin. We started noticing our wrists were puffing up, and hands and ankles puffing up, particularly, and that was again from the heat rash situation. It's called miliaria. And the only cure for it is to rest and be in a cool place. So neither of those options was available, so we just had to keep on going.
Yeah. So what were the nights like? Where would you find lodgings? Say, would you find those in the cities along the way?
We there was a variety of lodgings. Some people were sleeping in communal halls. Others of us, like myself, we had a couple hotels that we worked between, and we did that partly because I was communicating back here to Canada a lot. Describing the experience, and because we were still trying to build to just draw Canadians into the Remembrance Day, the remembrance aspect of this and what we were doing, and publicize it so that people were aware of what was happening and would think about it in terms of remembrance and that. So there was a lot of that, there was three or four of us who were working on that quite a lot. So often after the marching, I'd get back to the hotel and spend 2 or 3 hours working on that, and then you'd go to bed, and it was fairly late. It tended often to be 10 or 11 o'clock even, and then we'd be up again at 3 in the morning. So there was a sleep deprivation situation that was also creeping in by about the 10th day.
Did you have veterans who fought on Sicily? A part of this? I mean, I don't know how much they marched or not, but I mean, they obviously came for some of the festivities and the commemorations.
We had one veteran who was with us the entire time, and that was Captain Sherry Atkinson, and he was he had served in the Royal Canadian Regiment, and he was with us every day. His wife drove him to wherever the community was that we were going to be coming into, and he was 92 at the time. And he's still alive. And so he was sort of the symbol of the veterans, the representative of the veterans. And so he spoke every day. And the Sicilians loved him. They were all coming up to have their picture, especially all the women would want to have their picture taken with him. The children wanted to have their picture taken with him. And so he had pretty busy day, after every ceremony because of that. And he said at one point that he was very aware that it wasn't about him, that they were seeing him as the symbol of all the other Canadians who went into Sicily with him. Mm-hmm. And, what we really came to realize is that although technically the Sicilians were our enemies in 1943, because Mussolini was sided with Hitler, that what happened was when the Canadians arrived, the Sicilians were starving. They were in pretty dire straits. They had a lot of health issues and things that were happening. A lot of the towns had been heavily bombed and shelled as part of the invasion. And they ended up greeting the Canadians as we came in as liberators, even though we technically were their enemies. Mm-hmm. And that was probably a unique situation. Is it only in Italy that did that happen, where you had, what should have been enemies welcoming us as liberators. And partly that was because the soldiers gave them food, they gave them medical attention, and they helped reestablish these communities, get them up and running again. There was one fellow, he is responsible for a monument outside of Izbica called Sid Frost, and he set up that monument because he was a young lieutenant and arrived in Izbica as a soldier and was drafted by the military police into his job was to be the mayor of the town and to help get it all up and functioning again as a viable community. So there was these bonds built between the Canadian soldiers and the Sicilian people.
One of the things that people realized when that book came out in 2008 was that we didn't know this history as Canadians, as we should. What did you find in terms of the Italians and what they knew of what happened there 70 years ago?
Their memory was pretty sketchy, too, in a lot of cases. You had mayors sometimes who, would be describing what had happened, around their particular part of the town, and they would have the Americans having liberated them or something like that. And it was the Canadians. And, so you had this kind of thing. And partly the march served to correct that as well. And, there were three or four monuments that were unveiled in the course of the Operation Husky 2013. So, and those regarded, different aspects of what we did in Sicily. And I think, certainly when it was over, the region that the Canadians did liberate in Sicily, that people were very aware now of what that intercourse between the Sicilians and ourselves. And
the story of Steve Gregory, I mean, it's fascinating to think how you the two of you met through that original book and a phone call, and then having traveled now across Sicily and in terms of marking Operation Husky, in the course of getting to know him and knowing him, did you get a sense of just why it's important for him to remember?
I think he was very struck when his son was doing the research about how he couldn't find material for his son to use to understand what Canadians had done in Sicily. There just wasn't really a book out there about it. And when he looked at that, it was like, well, we've lost this history and these Canadians. And then, you know, as time goes on and he ends up in the Canadian cemetery and he sees these all these headstones, and he's realizing, well, we've lost this history. So there's no one honoring these soldiers because the history's lost. And unless you bring back the history and make people and give that back to Canadians, they won't remember these people who died and are buried forever in the Sicilian soil. And it just, he's the kind of person, if he sees something that needs to be addressed, he doesn't look for somebody else to deal with the situation. He just goes in and addresses it.
Yeah.
And which was a remarkable commitment for a civilian. And he was always very careful and strident that it was going to be a civilian project. It was that the and not a government. He wouldn't let the government take it over. He wouldn't let the military take it over. He kept it very much that it was a, you know, a group of civilians who were doing this.
What do you think that says about where we are as Canadians in terms of remembering and Remembrance Day? Because when we hear of a guy like Steve Gregory, we're astonished at his commitment and just the amount of resources that he, and the time that he spends on an effort like this.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't people like him, I guess.
There aren't that many, and that's the thing. And you know, one of the things we all really realized as we were doing this, the documentary filmmaker who's made a documentary on the same experience referred to it as an act of extreme remembrance. And I think he really nailed it. And we've thought about everyone I've talked to who was on the march, and also the young people who were actually installing the markers, because Eric and his a friend did most of that work of putting up the markers, and then we would come. And they all talked about, everyone's talked about, you know, when they go to the Remembrance Day ceremonies on November 11th, it means an awful lot more to them than they did before. Rod Hoffmeister, for example, whose father was Bert Hoffmeister, who became one of, arguably, the best general of the Canadian Army in World War II. Anyway, he said, you know, when you go to the cenotaph in Vancouver here, and it's usually raining, it's a formality. It's not a personal kind of thing. It doesn't have a person. He wasn't personally identifying with it. He was just going through the formal, you know, it was something you did.
Yeah.
And now he said, you know, it's very personal. Every time he goes to the cenotaph at Remembrance Day, it's very moving for him. It's so much more contextualized, I guess, really, is what the word, than it was before. And I found that, too, as since being at Operation Husky 2013, we've had two Remembrance Day ceremonies since then. They feel a lot more, I feel a lot more involved and engaged in the ceremony.
So that this experience of Operation Husky 2013 changed Remembrance Day for you more than, say, the 20 other books that you've written.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And I think it was because we had that 20 days of walking, and a lot of that, you know, at least a certain portion of that every day was spent, you know, just reflecting on what the soldiers experienced and the sacrifice that ultimately the ones who were killed and the ones who suffered grievous wounds and had to come back and cope with those for the rest of their lives. You know, that generation gave us this big sacrifice and to honor that.
So what do you say to people who are like myself, who would never think of going on a walking trek like this, and what we should be thinking about when it's November 11th?
I think the thing to think about is that, you know, there are two generations particularly, and now, of course, there's, you know, soldiers today who are serving serving on our behalf, is that, you know, we had those two generations that went out and they did something that was necessary. They served their country well, and they sacrificed. There was the sacrifice of actually many of them losing their lives, and that it's our responsibility to remember that and pay proper tribute to their sacrifice and their valor.
Have you, looking at your career, in terms of the writing that you've done, the books you've published, have you viewed your work chronicling our history as a service, as necessary even?
Yes, I think so. After about the second book of the Canadian Battle series, because, you know, I didn't really realize that I was going to end up writing a series that would tell the entire story of the Canadian Army in World War II, you know, over 14 volumes. You know, who could imagine on taking that on at the initially? I would have run away. I looked at the way our Canadian military history story had been told, and if you looked at the British and American histories of Normandy or the Italian campaign or whatever, we weren't there. You know, we'd be like a footnote in those stories. So they weren't telling our story. And then I started looking at the Canadian work on the thing. And largely, same thing. They were very academic. They were very dry works. Not something that the average Canadian was going to pick up and read. And so I did look at it that, you know, really that history had been lost to the average Canadian. And so it was my job, once I got into the second or third book and realized I was going to do this thing, to give Canadians back at least that portion of their history, their understanding of the history of Canada and World War II.
And so you haven't run away. You've kept at it, continuing to write these books. I mean, that's a given for you, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm in for the long haul.
Yeah. And it is the right time. Well, I don't know if is it the right time that you're doing this? Because, I mean, I don't know what kind of research you could have done, say, 15 years after the end of the war, or, say, 20 years. Do you find yourself, when you're writing these books, defining and writing the definitive history, say?
Yes. And, you know, I think what's interesting is that in the late 80s is when I first started looking at this, because I met a group of veterans in a Legion after Remembrance Day ceremony, and they were talking about this horrible battle that they had been involved in a place called Ortona, Italy. And I realized I knew nothing about this, and I set out to find a book, and there wasn't anything. And I thought, well, somebody needs to write a book about this, and that was when I decided I would try. And for about 5 years, I was unable to get a publisher, because in that period of the late 80s, very early 1990s, the editors were sort of saying, well, it was a long time ago, these people are all dying off, and nobody really cares. And you sort of saw the truth of that. You know, you go to the Remembrance Day ceremonies back in that era, and there weren't that many people around. You know, the soldiers were there, the cadets were there, the Boy Scouts and stuff like that. But, you know, the average citizen wasn't there that much. And then, and I hate to say this, but I think it's what happened, is then Saving Private Ryan came out. And literally within 6 weeks of Saving Private Ryan coming out, I got a book contract to do the book on Ortona. And it was actually the same editor who turned me down before. and, you know, that, I remember the Remembrance Day ceremony in Victoria very well that year, because I'd been going down. And, you know, we would have 500 people out.
Yeah.
And there was 2,000 people turned out at the Cenotaph that year. And so the only reason that could possibly be was Saving Private Ryan, because they saw that film, and then they thought, gee, we should go pay remembrance.
Yeah.
And it's been like that ever since.
Yeah.
And then I started my series, and so it coincided with people's minds turning towards remembrance, and so my work comes in there, and, you know, it's part of that.
Yeah, and so I mean, you mentioned off the top 27 books. How do you keep the stamina that you have, that you need to write these books? I mean, going into a new project, I mean, does that? I mean, it must seem familiar after doing it so often. But did you find it difficult at all in the process?
Each book is in is quite, it's funny, they're all a part of the same series, but each book is different. Yeah. The research tends to come together in different ways. What I start to see is the important part of that story, the essential parts of that story are slightly different from book to book. So they've got a freshness to them that remains because, you know, sometimes you can imagine, well, you've all read mystery series where eventually you feel like the author's kind of just run out of things to do. And you sort of, or is just tired of it, you know, and you know, I was sort of worried, you know, that that could happen as it went along, because especially now, you know, we're at this, you know, there's 11 books in the Canadian Battle series and more to come. So it's keeping that freshness there, and so far I don't have a problem with that. I am slowing down a bit, whereas we were having a one Canadian Battle series book almost every year. It'll be 1.5 to 2 years now.
Yeah. Do you think of things that you'd want to write about that you haven't been able to because you've been your time's been consumed writing about Canadian battles?
Well, actually, speaking of mysteries, I would like to get back to my mystery series that I was doing. I had three books in that series, and I'd love to do another one. And I have a whole bunch of ideas for mysteries, but I just haven't had the time because of just the demands of doing this kind of research. I think what I'll have to do is just go and lock myself away for a few months somewhere.
We're talking at the end of October. This won't be up on the site until early November. You're in town to screen a film.
That's right.
That's based on all of this. Max Fraser, you've alluded to him already. He's a filmmaker from the Yukon. Is that right?
That's right. And so he made it. He was with us through the entire track. He actually had a 5-person film crew. So there were cameras all around, which was an interesting part, too, because none of us had ever had the experience of being essentially characters in a film before. So that was unique. And so he's made a documentary about it called Bond of Strangers, the Operation Husky 2013 story. And we're premiering that at the SFU Gold Corp Theater on this Sunday.
Yeah,
and I'm going to be also reading from the book, so it's this joint presentation, and this is sort of we premiered it in Yukon, Whitehorse, on October 27th, and then we're taking it out on the road into Ontario and Montreal through the first week in November.
So you'll be in Montreal on Remembrance Day.
That's right.
What in terms of now taking this film across the country, I mean, will you be meeting with, I don't know how many veterans are left of the Sicilian campaign, but obviously you'll probably be meeting with some family members, won't you?
Yes, and there's family members and veterans as well. Sherry Atkinson, for example, is coming to our Toronto debut of the film and book. And then we're going to Belleville, and one might wonder why Belleville, Ontario, but that's where the Hastings and Prince Edward Regiment hail from, and so they're co-sponsoring an event there with us in the Belleville area, and same in Kingston, Princess Wales own regiment is sponsoring us there, and so we've got these connections with the units that had some linkage back to the Sicilian campaign, and they're really happy to have us come into their town and bring out their community to participate in this, what is another sort of activity of remembrance.
Yeah, so it'll be too late for people listening to us in Vancouver to see the film, but it can be bought, can't it?
That's right. It's available as a DVD off of online web sales.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great way, after even before reading this book, to seeing that on film. It's a you know, everything's come together, hasn't it?
Yeah,
well, thinking of the first book too, 2008. You know what I mean?
That's right. Well, it's been interesting, the events that we held in Whitehorse. It was very much that people were seeing that the video and the book complemented each other rather than duplicating each other. And then a lot of people were buying Operation Husky as well, because then they get the third, so it's the full story through the three packets.
What makes this book, Through Blood and Sweat, just interesting to read is that it's a memoir. It's of all you people that went there and did this 2 years ago. But it gives us insight into your work and who you are and why you do what you do. And in that sense, as a reader of yours for many years now, it's a tremendous insight. And so congratulations on this book and continued good luck with it. It's nice to see you again.
Thank you, Joseph.
Zelke.ca is the website from where the book is called Through Blood and Sweat, A Remembrance Trek Across Sicily's World War II Battlegrounds. It's published by Douglas and McIntyre. Its author, Mark Zelke, joined me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.